geese. More fun than a room full of wombats. Able to reach huge audiences with a single broadcast. Yes, it's the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. And now, another exciting episode in the adventures of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Well, hello there. Welcome to the program. Another exciting episode of Outdoor Journal Radio, the podcast. He is Peter Bowman.
Hi.
And I'm Angelo Viola, in case you were wondering.
Do you remember who did that voice there? Is that a computer voice? Welcome to the show there. Did you have an announcer come in and do all that stuff, or how'd that work? Because you just should be saying the Outdoor Journal Radio podcast. You know what I mean? He says the show, and I'm thinking we should have that modernized. Outdoor Journal Radio podcast is what he should say.
Dean, make a note.
Come on now.
Thank you, Dean.
The people on the YouTube right now don't know what we're talking about because that gets flagged for copyright.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, just to let everybody know watching YouTube, we just have this whole intro, audio intro. This guy comes on, and the geese are honking, and the wombats are going crazy.
So none of that plays on YouTube.
No, because Superman song.
I brought that all up.
The Superman song in the background gets flagged.
Why? It's free domain. It's not. It is.
We can fight it, but
don't you have enough fights in your life, Ange, right now? How many are you going through right now? Do you think? How many fights you figure you got going
right now on the agenda?
Yeah, and that people don't know about. You don't have to say what they are; just numbers.
I think a none.
Well, you got some stuff that you're fighting with somebody, somebody, like a lawyer stuff and anything like that. You know what I mean?
I got none.
Oh.
I got none. Right now, I have no encumbrances in terms of litigation.
The NRA, weren't they?
The NRA?
You got something against the NRA?
Oh, no, that's the National Rifle Association.
That's correct.
I was thinking the money people.
Oh, the IRS.
The IRS. You're right.
I knew it.
You know what?
There's always something going on in the background with that guy. Always something going on with that guy.
Can I talk about the IRS, by the way? But before I do that.
MR stupid.
Because it's a funny story, and I need to share that.
It is a good one.
Before I do that, though, I have to tell you guys, I had an incredible experience this morning on the way to work. That blew me away. Simple little experience. It wasn't a big deal, but it moved me. I got to tell you, I'm driving about one block from my house. I'm driving up the street, and I see in the middle of the road that there is something eating something. I just don't know what it is. And as I get closer, it dawns on me that this is a very large bird.
This is not my bird.
This is a huge bird, and it was a golden eagle in the middle of Cartriff Drive. Ooh.
In Oshawa.
In Oshawa.
Or Whitby, or wherever it
eating,
is.
Right? Eating a rabbit, like a roadkill rabbit. And I eased up to it, and it looked up at me with those big, beautiful golden eyes. It was magnificent.
Wow.
It was just a massive bird. And at just about when I'm right next to it, this other car was coming down the other lane and it spooked him and he just opened those wings up. And I swear to God, his wingspan, it was the size of this desk.
Wow.
It was just, and he just, oof,
with the rabbit.
With the rabbit in his talons, and it's just lifting up like a helicopter.
Nice.
And off it goes. In the middle of the city.
Wow.
Blew my
mind.
You
could probably, if you kill another rabbit, you can put it in the middle of the road again. He might come back for more.
That's not a bad idea.
You know what I'm saying?
This time, the idiot that I am would take some shots.
You had your phone with you, didn't you?
Of course, but I was so in awe of what I was experiencing live. I didn't want to take away from that moment to get my phone out. And then, I just didn't want to do that.
You could get our good friend Bova to kill the rabbit because now he's on a killing spree. You know, he knows how to do a kill thing
good
for
point.
Us. So Bova just killed the yellow jacket here because we were not going to run the podcast without that yellow jacket dying because he's going to sting one of us. So Bova, being the taller of us two men, could reach it, and I couldn't reach it. So,
which means we cannot put the disclaimer out that no animals were hurt during the taping of this show.
That's right. And we were taping it at the time. So Dean has that audio bit. If anybody wants to pay, spend $4.30, they can have that sent to them.
Right? The IRS, on the other hand.
IRM, too. Okay.
I'm having a bit of difficulty. It's a two-year-old problem. I just share this with you because sometimes you hear things and you got to go, wait a minute. That's got to be made up. There's no way that that's real.
There's a bunch of bullshit.
Exactly.
Jimmy Gondice says the
exactly.
best.
Exactly.
Always says the best.
Yeah. Jimmy would have had a ball with this thing.
You should have that voice when she does and when, just when push the button.
That's a bunch of bullshit.
And you go, where did that come from? What was that? But Jimmy, I know that name.
So get this. The IRS owes me money. And
that's the U.S. version of our
CRA.
CRA.
So the IRS owes me money, and it's 2 years old, this debt that they have with me. So 2 years ago, I started getting on their case saying, hey, like, where's my goods, right? My money. I see that we don't have a mailing address for you. And the last time the check was put in the mail, it went out with no mailing address. It just went out with the name of the city. Well, that's kind of odd because you've been mailing me stuff for the last 22 years. What do you mean now you have no mail? Anyways, sorry, sir. Something happened here. I'm going to put it in right now. Boom. We're going to reissue the check. If you don't get it in 9 weeks, call us.
9 weeks.
9 weeks? Whoa. What do you mean 9 weeks? That's like over 2 months. Yes, sir. Unfortunately, the mail service is not very quick between the U.S. mail. And Canada.
Blaming the mail.
What is it, Pony Express? 9 weeks? Awesome. The Pony Express was quicker than that. But anyways, that's okay because you can't argue with these folks because they'll hang up on you, right? I know that from experience. Anyways, to make a long story short, 5 times now in the last 2 years, I'm getting the same excuse from them. And that is that they don't have my mailing address. But what's remarkable about that, think about this. So first of all, for 22 years, I had no issues getting mail from that, getting checks from them. Now they can't seem to mail me a check because they have no mailing address. However, in between all of these discussions I have with them, I get mail from them. Not check mail. Not mail with checks in it. Just other mail. They have an address for that. They just don't have it for the check mail. You talk about frustration. And you can't, like, you want to reach through the phone and say, look it.
Can they e-transfer you? Is there a way
they
of doing
could that? Have had we started the transaction that way, but now that the transaction is via check.
You're going to change your ways from now on if you can? Absolutely.
No,
okay.
If I ever get paid.
Right.
Like, how do you deal with this stuff? So we now have an ombudsman.
Ombudsman, yes.
That is supposedly going to look into this.
You need to call Donald Trump.
2 years.
You need to call Donald Trump when he gets back in. You
know. I don't want to make this a political issue, but when Donald was in, as soon as Biden came in, I had a problem getting money.
Yeah, he's saving a bit of tax dollars. That interest.
Has nothing to do with politics. I don't want to do that. So anyways, I thought I would share that with you. Anybody else having problems like that, let us know. I want to know.
Yeah. Or if you've seen a golden eagle in your street.
Or if you've seen a beagle with a golden...
golden rabbit.
Rabbit.
Yeah.
That would work too.
Eyes of an eagle and balls of a beagle.
Wonderful program today. A gentleman will be joining us. His name is Dave Stewart. He is the host of Wet Fly Swing, one of the premier podcasts in the fly fishing fraternity.
And, been at her a long time, that's for sure.
At her. He's got 600 episodes. Wonderful guy. We're going to meet him a little later on in the program.
How many episodes we got, Dean?
This is 119.
Oh, there it is right there, written from your face.
Right there.
Wow, that guy's got a lot. He's 6 times more experienced than us in the podcast world.
That's right.
And we're busy at it. Holy crap.
Exactly. But he does a weekly show just like we do.
No, 3 times a week.
Oh, he does three?
3 times a week. That's what I'm pretty sure.
Well, he says he has three interviews a week.
He has three interviews, but he says he puts out a show a week.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, why are you trying to screw me up? Like, it's not hard
it's
enough.
It's exciting for the audience.
It's fun. It is.
Oh, for us too, AD.
Yeah, it's
for
all
us
entertainment. Okay,
by the way,
it's
you look lovely in that new set. Have I told you that before?
This is my first time on camera with it, I think.
You just look really? You look so stately.
Thank you.
I think is what it,
it
is.
It fits this this podcast is the one with all this in the background, too.
Right.
It almost seems intentional, right?
You figure it is?
Is that what it is?
Fly fishing podcast, the flies behind me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we never, you know what we should have done? We should have done a close-up. Yeah. So that when he comes on, he'll see that we're serious about fly fishing. Like, he'll say, oh, man, these guys are real.
Yeah, we should have had you guys back here.
We should have moved into your studio. We could have done that.
You could have put those over here for your new redecoration.
Yeah, I could have. I wonder how many people will even notice if you hadn't just said that we have.
Probably nobody, because I didn't notice. But mind you, they see it more than I do, right? So anybody saying when Angelo, you want to write in and say, Angelo, you did a great job. Wow, does that wall ever look fantastic, Angelo? You did a great job. Because he's already said it for himself, too, so.
The store, Fish and Canada store, we have some new items.
Give me a hell yeah.
Items that we're all excited about. The first time ever have we kind of played around with the Fish and Canada logo.
Look at there,
Played around with the Fish Canada logo, and now we have some very, very, very cool.
I'm liking this.
I like it.
I'm liking this. You've left out the largemouth bass, but
we got it. We got largemouth.
No, but he's not up here.
He's not up here.
You know, it's kind of.
But we have largemouth as well.
You know, you're profiling the fish, I think.
You figure?
Yeah.
By dropping it out?
Yeah.
Same.
He's got too big a mouth.
Something.
He's got too big a mouth. Yeah.
Well, we should look and write it down. We'll present it to our committee. And
Micropterus selenoides, it should say them in there, just in case anybody was wondering what the scientific name. Could put that in there.
Very nice. The boys are doing a good job. I like
very
that.
Good.
You'll love
like
those
the new
garments. They're absolutely wonderful. All available at the store at fishandcanada.com. Or if you're used to going through the back door.
Oh, my.
Thank you.
That's an inside joke, anybody. That was good.
If you're used to that, you can go to shop.fishandcanada.com. But honestly, like, why would you do that?
You guys are brilliant.
Why would you do that?
Why not?
Just go through the front door, and then you get to experience all this wonderful stuff. Like news, for example, we got all kinds of great news stuff on .com. We got all kinds of.
How's our new writer working out? Is he getting anything going yet?
I think he's going to be
good. He's on his way. Good.
Yeah, he's going to be a little tardy on his deliveries. But
what's tardy mean? What does that mean?
A little slow.
Okay.
Not that he's a little slow.
No,
it's just his production.
His production.
He's an artist. There's a process.
He's an artist. Thank you.
An artist. He's an artist. Yes.
So you can't rush things.
Okay.
But, he's good.
Okay.
So we'll introduce him. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to introduce him
after his first article is up.
We're
going to
bring him on the podcast, and we're going to talk with him.
And we're going to talk about his tardiness.
Yes,
for sure. I like that.
Okay, because he'll have some good stories about
Good stories, that guy. We should get him to write. We should get him to write some of our history. Well, the Cambridge Bay shoot would be a great little piece on the website.
Oh, what a great story that would be. Oh, my God. Anyways, it's all happening at fishingcanada.com and the store. Fishing Canada store.
Yes.
Listener feedback, Mr. Bowman.
Did you remind everybody that our Fishing Canada show? Did you say that? I don't remember you.
No, we don't need it.
Anymore. Okay, redundancy. No, okay, yeah. Okay. Well, listener feedback from D. Sharsky. Is that right? D. Charsky. The Apple Podcasts. 5-star rating. Thank you, D. Charsky. That was awesome. You guys are great, and every once in a while, hilarious.
He didn't want to overstate it, right? So
we're not hilarious every minute of the podcast, Ange. Every once in a while.
He says, every once in a while you're hilarious. Okay. All right.
He's being funny. He's hilarious. I think he's funnier than we are. When you think about that, he's getting a little joke in there. You're taking offense to that. He's giving a compliment.
I'm not taking offense. I'm just curious how you can say every once in a while. We do our best. We try.
But
not always.
Thank you, Dicharski.
Evidently, not always successful.
Dicharski. I like that.
Also, if you go to fishingcanada.com, apparently we highlight our podcast network there.
Give me a hell yeah.
You figure?
Well, apparently, according to my book here, we do talk about all of our various podcasters.
There's a Jagga right there. Look at somebody was trying to tell me a mushroom on a tree the other day was a Jagga, and I said, no, that's not a Jagga, but I couldn't find one to show them. They were Doesn't all those little like mushrooms. Them. Not even close.
Not even close.
No, that's not. No.
Anyways, Under the Canopy, which is one of our very successful podcasts. By the way, this is an interesting fact. Under the Canopy is either, you know, in the top five, but sometimes second, even has been first in its category in Canada on the podcast stratosphere.
What's the category? Dean, what is the category? That
Nature.
Nature.
Yep. Nature.
Wow. Yep.
Good for Jerry.
So sometimes it's the most listened to podcast under the Nature category.
That's awesome.
The nation.
And I saw it on the TV at the gym the other day. Popped up on the screen.
You told me that, yeah.
How?
They highlight nature podcasts in that category every week. And because he was number one, it just like scrolled past all the podcasts and it highlighted the one right next to him. But he was on the screen.
Did you tell him?
Yeah, I did.
That's hilarious. Anyways, poor Jerry.
If you go there, you'll see that we've got episode 40 highlighted for you. It's Cooking with Medicinal Herbs and Spices with Chef Antonio Maleca, who also happens to be one of our other podcasters on Eating Wild.
Come on now.
Part of our network.
So they're collaborating now.
They're collabing.
Our artists are collaborating.
That's a good thing. Well, when Jerry was on their podcast at the Sportsman Show, that was very entertaining. That was a really good podcast. Remember that one?
No. I was too busy.
Well, you can listen to, you're supposed to listen to it anyway.
I'm
you don't
trying
have to listen
catch
live.
Up.
You were busy there signing autographs and kissing babies. Now you got.
I'm trying to catch up.
Stay with the network, bro. It's your network, bro. Come on.
What do we got? Dairy Service Stars and most of the Eating Wild Pies. Done. Good. Check it out. It's all there at fishingcanada.com, apparently, according to Dean.
Hey, in the news, there's the title, human CWD scare turns out to be a false alarm. So this is it brought up concerns of chronic wasting. Just go ahead.
So to Dean's credit, I have to say something because he approached me with this story several weeks ago.
Yes.
And he said that he heard this and that, and here's the story as it's developing. And I said, great, put it up on .com. I mean, we were always at the leading edge of breaking news like this. And he said, nah, I don't know. I think I'm going to let it breathe for a little while. I just, some things I'm not comfortable with. So we'll let it breathe before I put it up. And lo and behold, he was right.
So what did he have before versus now?
Well, there was a lot of initial reports as soon as the study came out that were they said it's confirmed now humans can get CWD from deer meat.
At the time that Dean told me about this, it was still very much
not confirmed.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were going to put it up there as holy mackerel, look what's going on.
Which a lot of places did, by the way.
Exactly. But not us.
So the story goes that there were two hunters that consumed venison, correct?
Yep.
For over a period of time.
And these two hunters passed away. So the first thing is that everybody's going, chronic wasting disease. It can affect humans. It is a bad thing. It is this and that and the other and the other. But obviously that was when everybody's reporting, that's what they were saying. It got into it that it was a neurological disease. However, it wasn't CWD. It was
CJD, which is Creutzfeldt-Jakob.
Which is a prion disease. It's a brain disease, prion disease. Yeah. It's like mad cow, apparently. Yeah. So certain proteins in the brain begins to fold abnormally, causing brain damage and other symptoms. And obviously, they're thinking that this caused their death. Now, the weird part about it was, did they prove it, Dean, that it was that killed them?
Yeah.
It was that that killed them.
Yeah, they both had
And they both, how close did they die within time wise?
They died. You know? So this was part of the controversy that made me not want to post it right away, because so they consumed the same deer from the same lodge that was confirmed later to have CWD in the area. But the incubation period of CWD, I think, is over like 20 years.
Right.
And it wasn't 20 years ago that they ate this. I think it was like 10 years ago or even less than that. Even less than that.
Yeah.
So it didn't really make sense right off the bat that that would have killed them. So like they've probably had this CJD in their body for like 20 years plus.
So did the deer have CWD as well?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Both.
Yep.
Oh my
but, God. No, not both. It had CWD.
CJD? What is that then?
No, CJD is what the two men actually died of.
Yeah. Right. Oh, okay.
It didn't come from the deer.
No.
It
did not. Okay.
Right?
Okay. I thought when he said it was like a mad cow disease, maybe that was some kind of relation to all this meat
totally
stuff.
Unrelated, separate thing. This is what they actually died of.
So weird.
But the original report said that they died of CWD.
Right.
Yeah.
So Dean, in his divine wisdom,
said there's something wrong here. Nobody dies from that stuff.
This doesn't sound right.
They don't die from that shit around here anymore.
They never did.
Never did. So yeah. So they got
to
figure.
Well, because to me, it's pretty scary. Because I mean,
laughing by the way at the.
Because if they found out that this was transferable to humans, the hunts would be banned pretty quick. I think.
Oh, of course.
Like it's.
Oh, Angie, we'll put the beat on that guy walking there. I get you.
It's kind of scary.
So in this CJD, is that where there are 350 cases are diagnosed every year in the U.S.?
Yeah, that is correct.
I wonder if there's that's just the U.S. Did they say anything about Canada? Did they say anything like
No, it's super rare, though. I mean, that's why it is kind of suspicious that two people who were like lifelong hunting buddies did both get it.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like 1 in 1,000,000 chance of getting it. So it's kind of weird that two buddies got it, but
yeah. Quite a story.
Yeah.
The story behind the story is that man right there, he knew not to publish it. Right?
Well, he's good.
It's true.
Nobody's
it's
ever
true.
Doubted you.
Give yourself
you
a hell yeah or something.
Give me a hell
yeah.
You watch, because today's show is a perfect example of how smart Dean is, because their show is going to be very fly fishing concentric, and Dean, as much of a spin and baitcaster guy as we know him as, he is quite the fly fisher. So he will probably be showing some of his, if we can get him involved in the interview a little bit, I think he'll show you that he deserves a raise in pay.
Sam D.
That went by really quick, didn't it, Dean? Sorry, buddy, I tried.
Sam D. Agostino from Alberta, via email, incidentally, submitted the fan question to us this week. He submitted it to info@fishingcanada.com, in case you're wondering, for all of you sitting out there saying, how come I can't get any questions answered? My dad, God bless him before he passed away,
he used to say
to my mom, how come so-and-so, we don't see so-and-so anymore? How come we don't see so-and-so and this guy and that guy? My mom used to say, you fool. What do you think? They're just going to come walking through your living room? In order to see all these people, you got to get up off that chair and get out. And go see him. Well, some folks might be sitting there saying, how come Dean never gets one of my questions for the boys to answer? Well, in order to do that, you needs to write it into us.
Come on now.
Info.
What if they are writing in and they're still not getting published? What's the deal then?
Well, then they got a problem with Dean. They need to talk.
It's a bad question.
There are bad questions.
There are? What designates a good question from a bad question?
Bad question is like, what's the biggest bass you've caught?
That's a bad question?
It was a good question in our first 5 episodes.
Right.
But now it's a bad question.
We've grown a little bit, haven't we?
Yeah. Now we do very intelligent questions.
Like
very
this one right here. Yeah. Like this one right here.
So that's speaking of sophisticated questions, Sam D'Agostino from Alberta says, as we see inflation, taxes, and gas prices rise, will there be less... and less people getting out on the water? There you go. That's a very deep question.
It's a very good question, and I think, let's be honest, there has to be a point where people can't afford it. And I mean, getting out on the water, two things. You can walk down the bank, right? You can drive your bicycle to the bank of a river and fish. That's very cost effective. Or you can get in your truck, like we're going to do this year, and drive up to Northwestern Ontario, dragging a boat behind us with 250 horsepower.
Or New Brunswick. Or Nova Scotia.
Or Nova Scotia.
You drive all over the place.
Or we're flying to Northwest Territories, but right. but all that's at a cost. And yeah, you're right. That is very hard to afford that. You know, that's you need to save some bucks up for that deal, right?
Do you know what, though, all honesty, and I don't want to downplay the fact that there's so much pressure on everybody out there with regards to the cost of living. I don't want to downplay that, but I remember 30, 40 years ago saying the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. House prices, everything.
How in the hell can people afford to go fishing with taxes where they are?
Yeah.
With gasoline prices where they are, like with mortgages. So I don't want to downplay the, but it is.
No, it's huge. But I think, you know, you be careful with your money throughout.
Of course.
The non-fish. If you're a nutcase like myself, if you're a nutcase about fishing and you want to get out there and my truck pulls my boat and all that, and it's expensive. Well, then I don't go and blow my money on something else. I try to save my money and sort of put it towards my fishing so that, you know, you can kind of I don't know, to save a bit, you know, to do something. Yeah. I'm not giving up my fishing.
No.
Might give up something else. I'm not giving up my fishing.
Isn't that funny? You know what I mean? We learned that during the pandemic, right? That fishing was one of those things that it's uncompromised. You know, a lot of things, we gave up a lot of things during the pandemic as a community, but fishing wasn't one of them. Mm-hmm. In fact, statistics tell us that the activity actually increased during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So
I remember towards the end of it, when we were still just towards the end, where they're saying people can't even sit in the same car and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? At one point where there's some Mikey Burris and I, we wanted to fish together. We brought two boats. We said, piss on it. We're going to take the expense. We're going to, you know, and we went side by side for a while, shooting the shit with each other. And then he'd go over there. I'd go over here. We'd go back and talk and report it to you. Yeah, we just said, we're not letting the pandemic stop us. We're not letting gas prices stop us. We're going
fishing. So you increase the cost. Yeah. The hell with the cost. We're going to double them up.
That's what I'm saying. When your mind is set to do it, that's what you do, right? You save your money somewhere else.
All right. The humble goldfish, everyone's favorite aquatic pet. It's small, easy to care for. What's there not to love?
Even the cat may be mesmerized by the color and movements of your aquarium friends. Goldfish are great at home, but don't let them loose.
Releasing goldfish or other domestic aquatic pets or plants into natural environments is harmful to both your pet and the planet.
Goldfish disrupt ecosystems by outcompeting native species for food and resources in degraded habitats. They contribute to algae blooms, they kill aquatic wildlife, and pass viruses and diseases contracted in aquariums to wild fish.
They could even live up to 40 years and grow as big as a football. Anglers, this is where you come in. If you find a goldfish at your local fishing spot, report it to the invading species hotline or go online to eddmaps.com.
Remember to never dump your live bait into the water and risk spreading other aquatic invaders. Keep our lakes free from invaders and don't let them loose.
As the world gets louder and louder, the lessons of our natural world become harder and harder to hear, but they are still available to those who know where to listen. I'm Jerry Ouellette, and I was honored to serve as Ontario's Minister of Natural Resources. However, my journey into the woods didn't come from politics. Rather, it came from my time in the bush and a mushroom. In 2015, I was introduced to the birch-hungry fungus known as chaga, a tree conch, with centuries of medicinal use by Indigenous peoples all over the globe. After nearly a decade of harvest, use, testimonials and research, my skepticism has faded to obsession, and I now spend my life dedicated to improving the lives of others through natural means. But that's not what the show's about. My pursuit of this strange mushroom and my passion for the outdoors has brought me to the places and around the people that are shaped by our natural world. on Outdoor Journal Radio's Under the Canopy podcast, I'm going to take you along with me to see the places and meet the people that will help you find your outdoor passion and help you live a life close to nature and under the canopy. Find Under the Canopy now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
All righty then, let's move on. Our guest today is a fellow podcaster. His name is Dave Stewart, as I mentioned at the top of the program, a host of Wet Fly Swing Podcast. Welcome to the program. How are you, buddy?
Thanks, guys. Awesome. It's great to be here.
Love your background.
2017, you've been at this, Dave. Since 2017. Yeah. I didn't even know.
You've been going strong.
When is the first podcast ever been invented? Anybody have any idea?
I have no idea, but that's got to be close. Like,
17?
No, not even close. Actually, I know the podcast history pretty well. So it was more like 2005.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, the first one. Yeah, going way back. But 2011, 10, 11, 12, it really started getting to what we know it and really growing to the mainstream.
Okay.
I told this story before in the show. What's his name? Steve Labadie.
Yeah.
Our old radio producer. This show used to be a radio show.
Yeah.
And so one day after the show, he says, we really, and I don't remember, it could have been 14, 15, maybe 16. He says, we really ought to do a podcast with this show.
I could have just heard you. I could have just heard you right there. What? Cynical freaking
podcast. Yeah. I said, what the hell's a podcast? And he says, well, he says, it's a place where we record the shows and we put them on a shelf and then people can consume them at will. They can go and come. And I looked at him and said, are you a total idiot? Why?
How are you going to monetize that?
So right you now? Want me to give the audience an opportunity to listen to the show on their terms and their time and cannibalize my live radio show that people have to tune in and listen. And that at the time made so much sense to me. He looked at me, he says, yeah, I guess you're right. And off we went.
Are you guys loving it? Are you loving it? Looking back, you know what?
It's fun. It's great format. You know what I mean? It's kind of a free for all. If you want to go an hour, you go an hour. You want to go 10 minutes, you go 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a whole different atmosphere for sure. You know what I mean? You don't have our CTRC, whatever you call it, CRTC or whatever they are coming after us. I don't think anyways.
Well,
I don't
know they, what the are rules. They are going to now.
Are they?
Yeah, we've got some new laws in this wonderful country, but we shall not go there.
We're gonna break every one of them, buddy. We're gonna bust them.
So, all right, talk to us. How did this whole thing happen?
600 episodes. He's got over 600 episodes in this deal. So,
yeah, we're rolling.
Wow, you're rolling.
I love it. I would guess I love podcasting more than you guys. It's like everything since 2017. Actually, before that, 2015. We also had the Wet Fly Swing blog, and I just love podcasting. I was listening to all these business podcasts and everything. I was just all podcasts. I said, you know what? I'm going to set a goal. In 2 years, I'm going to have my own podcast just out of nowhere. And 2 years later, December 2017, I launched the Wet Fly Swing podcast focused on steelhead fly fishing. Our first season was all steelhead, we've expanded out to everything now. I mean, we just did an episode on Mako sharks on the fly and we do hunting everything, but I started in 20 and the success, I mean, every week since then, we haven't missed a week, whether holiday, you name it, started out every Tuesday, we were doing episodes, full length interviews. We've gone to, now we do 3 full length interviews every week. We've been doing that all year. So we have a lot of content and I just love talking to people and it's worked out.
Excellent. Good for you.
The only difference between this and live radio is the fact that, we're not committed to recording this program at a particular time.
That's
we do
right.
it every week, just like you.
Yeah.
But radio.
We don't even have to record the program in order.
No.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Or we can group record where we'll do 2 or 3 programs. So that part differentiates the experience from live radio. But otherwise, the rest of it is just great. It feels wonderful. I think it's just a natural progression for us. There is something about live, though, that I keep telling Pete, there's something about live that you just don't get with podcasts, right? There's that moment you open the door and you hang on the edge and you look down and here we go, and you jump out. Yeah. And that's the only part, right? That's the only
part. Yeah, we did a live last night. We did a live webinar with, you know, there was a few hundred people lined up. And so I do those live things, and it is fun, you know, because you got these questions coming in.
Right.
And you're fielding them. I mean, there's always that tech issue that could happen. You're always, like, worried that there's going to be something. But, you know, the podcast, I have another show I do where I focus on marketing, you know, experts. And I've interviewed some of the best podcasting experts around the country. And, you know, they, you know, just as a tip, one of the things they say about podcasting is the nice thing is that the editing part, people don't think about it, but every little bit of editing he said that you can do to clean it up makes your show that much better.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So that's something that you can't do live. And so there are certain things as hosts, I have little things I do and everybody where you can actually cut those out and people will never know it and your show will be better.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Without question.
That's true.
Post-production fixes everything. We're in the television world. That's what we do for a living. And
we do a fishing show here in Canada, and we'll shoot days of footage to get it down to 15 minutes on the TV show. Wow. You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
And,
so.
And 14 days in post-production to do that. Our crew spends 2 weeks in post to come up with that.
Wow, we must make a lot of mistakes out there.
Oh, there's something you don't know anything about. Anyways, so fly fishing. So first of all, how did you get into fly fishing? Where did this come from?
Yeah, it's pretty much my entire life. My dad he was a guide. And so I grew up in Oregon, and the Deschutes River is a big river down here. And, you know, I just grew up on the river. I mean, as long as I can remember, I had the fly rod. He was a guide. I was on the river basically teaching adults how to cast way back in the day when I was a little kid, you know, and I slowly got to a point. Yeah. And the podcast, you know, just came, like we said, came around as a nice transition, and it was just the perfect timing. At the time, I remember when we launched the podcast, it was kind of thinking like, wow, it seems like we're late to the game, but actually in the space, we're still early. I mean, to be honest with you right now, podcasting is still relatively young. You know, there's a lot of room for growth. It started out there. I mean, fishing steelhead, like I said, was my big species, trout fishing, rainbows, all that stuff. And I've just been a lifelong outdoorsman, whether that's hunting, you know, trail running, fishing. Like I love it all. I'm kind of the jack of all trades, but I built this thing around fly fishing.
Where are you based out of?
Yeah, right, I was just going to ask you the same thing.
Because you said Oregon earlier or whatever.
Yeah, right now. Yeah. So I'm on the coast. I'm literally, I could hear the ocean right from my place. And so I'm 2 hours west of Portland, Oregon.
Okay. And you have steelhead rivers that are coming in, sort of thing like that?
Yeah. Within a few minutes, steelhead are right in the backyard.
Perfect.
You know, fly fishing is one of those, it's much maligned in the angling world, as you probably know, although that's changed in the last 10 years or so, I would think, where it's become a little bit more mainstream, but it's still, it's still considered off to the left for most anglers.
And we talk about, I love this conversation because we talk about this a lot in our space.
So
why is that? What do you think? Why is that? I mean, they're a majestic fish. They're gorgeous fish. They're stronger than a bass and a pike and a muskie together.
Well, you're assuming it's one-dimensional. You're assuming you can only fish trout or salmon.
Yeah, it's everything. Anything you guys can fish, you name a species, and I'll show you a guest had on that's fished for that with the fly.
No, I'm talking about steelhead itself.
Steelhead.
But steelhead, you don't have to fly fish for them.
No.
But I think the difference is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the difference, Dave, is that as we'll call them, you know, spin anglers, right? As opposed to conventional anglers, we tend to be result oriented. In other words, it's not so much the game,
the art.
Whereas with fly fishing, I know guys, do you remember Alf Walker, our old buddy?
How could I forget Alf?
It didn't matter whether he ever saw a fish or not.
Yeah.
He would just get out and practice this wonderful craft that he had honed over years and years of experience, right? And he just wanted to get out and do that thing. And if he got a fish, what a great bonus for him.
Yeah.
And that's the way I see the difference between the two.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, Dave.
Yeah.
The catch versus the whole thing. Where are you putting that? Like, do you have to go out and get a catch in there, or is it just like answer?
You know, and you don't have to get a catch for sure. But I think that What I see, and there's tons of people, we talk about this all the time, and there's lots of people that fly fish that also conventional fish. There's lots of people that started out conventional and then they got into fly fishing. Part of it, I think, is that fly fishermen like the pain a little bit, you know what I mean? Like the challenge, because right. Fly fishing, I'm not going to say it's harder than just conventional fishing, but I feel like we try to get to these things, like muskie, for example. Can you catch muskie on a fly rod? Actually, we're setting up a trip to go to Wisconsin this year. I'm going to be flying there and connecting with our listeners. And it's not easy to catch a muskie. Some people might not even catch a muskie the entire time. So why do we do that? Because for the challenge. Right. And then also all that stuff that goes along with it, like just being on the water. I mean, we all appreciate that, right? Outdoors, mm-hmm. whether we're sitting here in front of a computer, but would you rather be outdoors on the river? I think everybody would say yes, even if we're not catching fish.
Yeah, for sure.
So let me see if I can dumb this down for me. What you're saying is...
What you're saying is...
We know it's going to be harder, or in some cases, damn near impossible for me to catch anything fly fishing, but it doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm just there for the game.
But actually that, and I will say that is maybe for some is true. We like to catch fish. Trust me. I've gone out in a session. I love catching steelhead. I love catching trout. And you actually, there are times when it's easier to catch with the fly. Right. In the right situation. And the technology now, you won't believe, right? The lines, everything has gotten so good that you can catch more fish now. So we go to the Great Lakes and we fish for steelhead, and you know, our guides out there are amazing, and they got these lines that are so dialed in that we can get down to the exact inch of where that fish is holding. Right. So it's different than it used to be. We're not using bamboo rods and silk lines anymore. Nice. So I think
some guys
love to catch fish. I love eating fish.
I'll bet you there's a fish you've never caught on a fly.
One that I haven't caught?
Yeah.
Muskie? Oh, have you got a muskie on a fly?
Yeah, there's been so many. Actually, to be honest with you, I mean, we're traveling a little bit now, but I've got so many on my bucket list.
Mm-hmm. You've never caught a walleye, I'll bet.
And that's one I want to catch.
That's a tough. I'm told by a fly fishers that's probably the most difficult freshwater game fish to target on a fly.
Yeah, I don't hear about it a lot, but I didn't think it'd be difficult. Yeah. But wow.
Yeah, apparently from what I'm Mark and Colin. You know the folks at New Fly Fisher Television?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had Colin. Yep, Colin's been on. We've done 3 New Fly Fisher episodes.
Oh, nice. They're good friends of ours.
Great. Yeah, Colin's awesome. We actually have our Canadian brothers. We have a in our feed at the Littoral Zone podcast is Phil Roy. He's in Canada, and he's our stillwater expert.
Nice.
Cool.
But he's the one that told me, Colin told me that walleye has got to be the most difficult one on his. And he's caught, like you, he's caught just about everything.
He'd know. He's in Algoma country all the time, right? Yeah. He's right in Walleye Central. Yeah. So
walleye for some reason. I don't know why. I mean,
you'd think on the mayfly hatch, they'd be easier to catch with that, but probably nobody goes for them then with a fly.
I think that's probably what it is.
You know what I mean? Because we're having a difficult time trying to get them when they're eating bugs. But
Would you?
I think that's it with walleye. I think it's that they're, and again, you just gave me, by the way, you gave me my next episode topic idea, walleye on the fly. So stay tuned.
But there you go.
I think they're deeper. I think they just stay deeper. Deeper in lakes and things like that, so they're harder to get down to with our fly gear.
You'd be surprised at that. Our summer walleye, we go in a little bit north, and we find not only are they shallower than we always perceived it, the bigger ones are usually shallow in the summer, like shallower, like less than 10 feet of water. You can get them in the middle of the day, even though their eyes are, you know, the whole thing with the light and all that. Yeah. They surprise you sometimes. They're just a predator. They get up shallow and they want to eat, right? The food takes over everything. So it's a bit of a misconception there. So
I think another thing about fly fishing that kind of kept it, as I said, it's considered to the left of center. I think one of the other things that kept it there is that for years, it was you really had to do some searching. This is pre-web. You really had to search to get the product. I mean, just getting rods, reels, lines, like none of the conventional retailers were selling much of that stuff. Even kept it kind of exclusive because accessibility for product was almost impossible. That's changed today, I trust. Like, you can pretty much get anything anywhere.
It's amazing today. I mean, and we always joke about, too, the old white guy, right? The fly fisherman is this old yuppity white guy that doesn't want to let anybody in. That's changed. It's gotten more diverse. And, it's all about diversity of species and, you know, crappie fly fishing in your backyard, right? That's go for it. But gear, 100%. I mean, I actually set up a link at wetflyswing.com/OJD, which is a intro to fly fishing. So if anybody wants to get the basics, like how to cast, I put a couple of videos in there. So, nice. And then there's also a link that says, here's where you can get a package fly rod. This is from Reddington. There's lots of great brands. Everybody has a good package, but you know, you can get one of these packages, rod, reel, line for under $300, a great rod that's going to last your lifetime.
Same as spinning then. Yeah. I mean, really at the, in that sense. Yeah. You have to agree though. You have to agree. No matter how you want to insist that it's easy, you can't tell me that if you take the same scenario, all conditions being the same, that you can teach a person to fly fish quicker or as quick as you can teach him to angle with a spinning gear.
No. Oh, no, the fly cast is the thing, right? So you have to, but again, you can learn it. And my, one of my tips is, you know, keep it simple, right? So you can learn to fly cast. There's a video that on that link that shows you exactly how to fly cast. It's not, everybody makes it harder than it is. It's actually a lot easier than you think.
That I'll have to give you. I agree. Cause we dabble with it. We don't do it. We don't.
Very dabbly.
Last time you and I did a fly fishing
Campbell show River.
Was Campbell River.
Oh, only time I've ever fly fished in my life.
Sockeye, wasn't it?
For pinks. And there was everything in there, but I think we got most of
it. It was a blast. We had a great time.
It was fun.
That episode was a real departure in so many levels. I mean, number one, the fact that we were fly fishing for him, but prior to fishing for them, we donned wetsuits and we actually floated down the Campbell River with snorkel equipment and watched these fish. And
thousands of salmon.
Were they swimming like next to your head and stuff?
It was unreal.
Totally immersed. There was one unreal. At one point. I remember, you know, the picture in your mind, right? I remember looking over at him and he was about, I don't know, 20, 30 feet away from me. And he was partially obstructed with salmon. Like he was in the middle of
it. So
was
many. See all those bricks in the wall behind us here? They were all salmon. Yeah. Not every one of those was salmon for, you know, 100 feet, 200 feet.
That is amazing.
And no sign of intimidation or fear.
Yeah, they thought you were a fish.
We just hung in with them.
They didn't care.
And then we got out, got the rods, and we spanked them with fly gear. So it was very
and there was
cool.
a black bear walking up the shore eating salmon. We had to get out of his way because he was walking through there.
How was the cast for you guys? Was it, you know, to get the line out there?
No, not bad, really. I got a line quick. He's done it before.
As a kid, I did probably as much of it as spinning. But I'll tell you one thing, though. I will tell you one thing is that if you've been away from it for a while, it takes a bit of time to get your form back, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get that nice fluid motion, because it's all about that motion. And when I get away from it, it takes me a bit to get back in the swing of things.
I'll tell you another thing with me on that trip is that I was having a real, I had an easier time learning to cast than I was at getting the fish. I had to start catching the fish, and I'm concentrating more about the cast than anything, right? Because it's the first day ever doing it. So that when I'm peeling the reeling in, what do you call it? Stripping it in, mending it in, whatever like that. Yeah. I was just basically getting it out there and then just retrieving it, and I wasn't getting any. Then the guy that was with us, he says, "Slow it down, let it get deeper." And as soon as he said that, "Let it get deeper," I thought, okay, now I got to start fishing, using my mind for fishing instead of this, you know. And as soon as I did that, slowed it down, boom, I started catching them too. So it was neat, like setting the hook and pulling, mending the line in like that instead of reeling it in. It was pretty cool, I have to say.
We should do another one. I didn't turn that off. We should do another one.
What do you matter with you?
I thought
that's your windshield guy. That's your boat windshield guy.
Oh, probably.
It is. I know him. Hank, that's Hank Bringer.
My phone is ringing. Nobody can hear it. It's incognito.
I got a question for Dean Taylor. Dean, our
producer
here. Yeah. He fishes both, but I didn't know when Dean first came on, he does fly fishing and conventional. What do you prefer, Dean? Do you prefer one over the other? Is it harder, one harder the other? What's your thoughts?
I like fly fishing way better. But see? I grew up,
there you go.
I grew up fishing tournaments and like I guided conventional. I never fly fished as a guide.
Right.
So now it's just like kind of a new challenge. I've only been fly fishing probably 8 years.
Oh.
So I'm relatively new in that world.
Okay.
I think we were talking before about like what's most intimidating. And for me, it was the culture. Like fly fishing culture is like, I get it's changing a little bit, but it's depending on like what parts of the internet you live, it's not super inviting.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, you need your Orvis backpack and your special and this your and all that.
Ascot tie.
Ascot tie.
Yeah, dry flies only and the whole deal.
And there is always, there will always be some of that. But, you know, I can tell you after interviewing all these people, big from biggest names to smallest names, you know, it just comes up a lot that we're all, we all understand that that stuff has gone on and it's out there. But I think it's just like the environmental stuff. Like we need to focus on it and get rid of some of the stuff that's hurting us. Right.
Yep.
And so I think that I agree 100%. You have this thing out there, but you know, I know myself, I'm one of the largest fly fishing podcasts in the US and we talk about it a lot. Like we understand like, yeah, when those trolls are out there and you have trolls, whether you're in whatever industry, right. There's always going to be trolls.
Yeah, and you can't
do anything about that. But I do feel like we are working our way to a better place.
Is there like a cool factor now in the fly fishing now, you know, where it's getting very hip, very younger people, kind of a cool thing to do?
It's like a hipster atmosphere.
Actually, Hooke, have you guys ever heard of the brand Hooke?
It's up
out of Quebec. So I just interviewed them yesterday and Fred is an amazing guy. He's got connections to some of the indigenous folks and things like that. But we talked about this whole conversation and he said like on the rivers now fishing for Atlantic salmon, which used to have a lot of money to fish and catch Atlantic salmon. Now there's all sorts of young hipsters out there doing it. And because we've made it easier for people to get into, you don't have to spend $10,000 on a trip to fish for Atlantic salmon. Right. So I think I do feel like there's a lot of that.
Dave, do we have a handle on the number of folks who pursue fly fishing for their angling fix versus standard anglers, spin anglers? Do we have a percentage or a number?
I think it's roughly, again, I'm going to highlight we had ASA, the Sport Fishing Association on recently, and they talked about it. But I believe it's something like, I want to say 7 million, in the U.S. at least, 7 million fly anglers. And then I think the conventional's like 100 million or something like that.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Maybe it's even bigger. Yeah. But it's a 10% or even less. I don't even know.
Just under two a digit, which you know what, isn't bad because I remember back when I was in the retail industry, it was I don't even think it was a single digit number. So it has come a long way. But what's exciting about that for anybody who's into it, is that it's got so much room to grow.
Yeah.
You know, if all you have to do, and let me ask you that question too. Cause I'm always thinking in terms of marketing.
Oh yeah.
Is the industry focused on converting or introducing new?
Right. Right. I think it's always been trying to do both, but I feel like it's converting. Like I think people are still, especially trips and more expensive stuff. Like, hey, we know these people that have been in it for 10 years are going to buy the $500, $1,000 rod. So that's where we can get our money. Although again, people are talking about like, hey, we need to get more people into this. We need new, fresh people, brand new. And that's why I've set up this series on our blog that shows you how to get into it. And I think a lot of brands are doing that because they understand like, yeah, we need more people. And to be honest with you, the world behind me is for a reason, right? It's that we find that the more people that get into fly fishing become conservationists and oriented to protect.
For sure.
So we had Yvon Chouinard, you know, founder of Patagonia on, and I interviewed him just like this. And he, you know, and so he's always thinking about our planet, right? How do we save our home planet? We've got all these, and again, it goes back to fishing. What's going on with steelhead right now? Numbers are not good. Atlantic salmon, there's places in Norway where numbers are not good. So how do we fix that? We've got to protect our home planet, and we can do that with a lot of things. So I always focus. So I think the more new people we get into fly fishing, the more people that are going to think about doing things that are good for the environment.
And I don't think there's any doubt of the fact that fly anglers tend to skew higher towards conservation than non-fly anglers.
But you guys tell me why this is, because again, we're all fishermen and hunters. Wouldn't you think that conservation, and which is just basically protecting our species, wouldn't that be just as high in that space?
It should be. You'd think it would be. But I think back in the day, like my dad, my grandpa and all that, you caught them and you ate them, right?
Everyone.
Knock them. And even if there's a limit there, I didn't know that. They didn't even care about limits.
To tell them catch and release.
And how good a walleye tastes, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. It's pretty tough, you know what I mean? Even when I was growing up, my dad took me brook trout fishing a lot. Now, we didn't fly fish at all, but we conventional fish. But We were out there and we were keeping some brookies. We were not throwing, we threw a couple of big ones back, but we, if they were like a 12, 14 incher or whatever, 12, 13 incher, we were keeping them for a pan fry. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that was the way we grew up. That's the way I grew up. And Dad said, you don't throw that back, you son of a bitch. You're going in the creek after it. You know what I mean? So I think it's been bred into us a lot now with I think the world of bass fishing tournaments has really changed a lot. I think that's changed everything, you know what I mean, for as far as catch and release. And now, like Angie and I now, and he grew up the same with me. They kept fishing, they ate fish, and we do it at lodges still for a shore lunch, but for the most part, we're throwing everything back pretty well, unless you want a meal, you know what I mean? You don't fill the freezer up anymore or anything like that. So we just got, I don't know, it's been a thing, I think, with the conventional anglers. We've kept a lot of fish in our day, so.
You don't hear fly anglers taking the time out of their day to do a shore lunch, for example.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just something, you know, it's unheard of.
I've done, we will be doing shore, I've done shore lunches 100%. I love eating fish. Okay. I'd fill my freezer if it didn't hurt the populations. Right. I would fill my, in fact, we had steelhead days when steelhead numbers were really great. Yeah. To be, you know, straight up, and I'm not even sure if I ever said this, but we would fill, you know, steelhead. It's not a, so again, if the idea being is we want to get our populations healthy enough so we can kill fish. That's the idea.
That's the
problem
idea.
Is some of these populations are so low.
Right.
They can't, they need help to get them above that little point. Once they get back up there, let's take some fish within a healthy range.
It's like hunters, right? Hunters are the greatest conservationists.
Absolutely.
But to your point, that's their goal is their to goal get is. The populations to a point where they can kill them.
That's right.
That's what hunters do.
Absolutely.
Right?
So. And for this guy, check this one out. So Fred on the, you know, the Hook A, the podcast that we had, he talked about hunting as well in Quebec. And he said, hey, we're starting to get people out there that aren't going, there's going hunting, but without a gun. They're literally going out there and they're checking out wildlife and all this stuff. Right. So, I mean, even that's going on in hunting.
Oh, wow. For sure. For
that's
sure.
Cool.
There's a transition there happening for sure that we're probably not aware of.
Hey, Dave, do you have anything going on in the U.S. or you're on the West Coast, right?
Yeah.
So on the West Coast in your rivers, we were talking about steelhead, salmon and stuff like that. Here in Canada, on our East Coast, our Atlantic salmon runs have really been changed, depleted, whatever it is.
Dwindling.
Dwindling. However, there's a lot of angling opportunities that are changing. Striped bass, smallmouth bass, muskie are all in these areas now. Have you got anything like that going on in your place, in your area?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, in my area, even though I'm physically in Oregon, I mean, I'm Saturday flying to Virginia to fish the Shenandoah. So I fish outside of Oregon now more than I do in Oregon. But it's happening everywhere. Again, I've interviewed people, whether it's in New York, you know, anywhere around the world. I mean, these things that we're seeing here, you know, I don't want to paint a doomsday picture because I don't think it is. I think there's a lot of good stuff that's coming, but there's a lot of numbers that are on the downturn. You know, Atlantic salmon's one, steelhead, brook trout. And what it is, and we all talk about it, right? Climate change.
Yep.
The climate is changing a little bit, and it's changing enough that it's affecting these fish that are cold water, that need cold water. So brook trout need cold water. They're one of those species. So, and I've had even guests on the show say, guess what? Brook trout in Maine are going away. They're eventually going to be gone. So get ready for smallmouth bass because those fish will be around.
There's a lot of pushback, pushback out there though from traditionalists, right? I mentioned to the folks at the beginning of this episode, when I, on my way in this morning, and I live in a very urban area, in the middle of the road, eating a dead rabbit was for the first time ever. And I've only seen one before, was a golden eagle.
Oh, wow.
In southern Ontario, in the GTA, in the Toronto area. I mean, unheard of. I only say that because it's funny you're talking about whether we call it climate change, global warming, whatever the hell we want to call it, whatever. There's something going on and there's change is afoot. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But I think now to that golden eagle. That golden eagle is there because something has changed in its normal environment and it's moving into more urban areas. Mm-hmm. When I hear stories about what's happening on the East Coast here with muskie and bass and stripers, it would be like us looking at that bald eagle and shooting it and saying, now get out of here. You don't belong here. You're an invasive species. You don't, you know, you're going to upset the ecosystem. It's no different.
When some people would do that. Some people would think that way and probably try and do it. You know what I mean? So,
it's no different.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny how we as humans have this predetermined notion of how things should be. And if it's altered, it's got to be bad.
Right.
It has to be bad. Right. There's no other, there's no other.
That's true. Yeah.
That's big. That guy might be good for your raccoon problem that you have around there.
Well,
I'll
tell you, he's going to fix all the rabbit problems I got.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
What a beautiful bird. Do you see many golden eagles?
You know, that's one we don't see a ton of. We see them around. We see lots of bald eagles.
Oh, tons.
Lots of bald eagles. Yeah, tons, everywhere. Yeah. But no, and I, I don't see too many. And I always go back a little bit to the conservation. But I think that's a good positive thing, right? We could go back right now and see where we are. But go back to the mid-70s. When we really had some crazy stuff, right? In Silent Spring, Rachel Carson wrote this book that basically got the word out about DDT in the country. And guess what happened? They got rid of DDT. And guess what happened to those bald eagles, which were disappearing? They came back, right? So it does work. We just have to give it time, right? We all, you know, my dad is in his mid-80s. He's really struggling now. And I remember him 20 years ago, tell me about when the steelhead numbers were going down. He said, man, I don't have that much longer to live. I can't wait for these things to come back. But to be honest with you, we all have to give it time. This might take 50 years, 100 years, right? Who knows, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's a process. I remember, and I don't want to stick to eagles here, but I remember Pete and I were in I want to say Montana. I'm pretty sure it was Montana that years ago when we were shooting Outdoor Journal.
Right.
And you remember that guy taking us to that place where all those eagles were, all those. It was Montana, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
This guy was, we were doing a cowboy riding in the mountains episode.
Nice.
And as a sidebar, one of the guys that we're working with says, you get many bald eagles up where you come from? And I said, well, of course, we're in the north. Okay, and you ain't seen bald eagles, he says, till I'm going to show you. And he took us down this ravine and around this bend.
It was everywhere.
And we looked out, and I'm telling you, Dave, it was the most impressive thing I've ever seen. There had to be 1,000 eagles all roosting on treetops by a river.
Weird.
At least 1,000.
You sure like they weren't cormorants?
Right.
It was,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, by today's standards, it would be like cormorants.
Yeah, right?
That's amazing.
All over the shore, they're feeding on fish, right? I think.
Yeah, and he was saying the same thing that, you know, it wasn't that many years ago that you'd never see this, but he says, obviously things are getting better. And, you know, so I don't know. But it was one of those. You know those moments in time, you have that snapshot that sticks here and now.
Yeah. I also remember those guys controlling the badger population. Oh. They didn't like those things in their cow fields, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, they dispatched of those babies.
Yeah.
Interrupt this program to bring you the much anticipated bonus code for the latest Fishing Canada giveaways. This week's code is Striper. That's Striper. S-T-R-I-P-E-R, all uppercase. And don't forget, that's 1P. Just type that in the bonus code section of the contest and receive 100 free entries towards all our current giveaways. For those who haven't entered yet, what the heck are you waiting for? Head on over to fishingcanada.com while you listen to the rest of this episode. Click contests and sign up for all the latest Fishing Canada giveaways. And now, back to the show. What's coming up with Wet Fly Swing?
We've always got a bunch going on. You know, I mean, with our content schedule, doing 3 full-length interviews a week, I mean, those are always, we've got, that's just a constant, you know, content machine. But it's hard to look ahead, to be honest with you. I've got a little team as well, so when I do these things now, I do an interview, it goes into the queue, I don't even think about it until it goes live, everything. But we have lots of events we do, so we do some really cool events around basically doing giveaways. So we do a big trip giveaway every month. So this month we just gave away a trip to Belize. We're doing one for Muskie. We're doing this trip actually May 13th. I'm not sure when this goes live, but May 13th, we're launching a Muskie giveaway. So one person can win that and basically $6,000 worth of gear. We do this awesome giveaway. Nice. And then I go out there and I meet up with the people, and then we get some people to meet up with us, and we do a big Muskie trip.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, buddy. That's great.
We do those
idea.
Every month. So if you go to wetflyswing.com, you can check out our most recent thing. The other thing we're really launching, which is I'm excited about, is our pro community. We're calling it The Shop. And so this is going to be a place where all of our listeners can come in online to a place and take all the education further with webinars and just hanging out. Just kind of my thought is you go into, you know, a local fly shop or your fishing store, have a beer, hang out, talk about fishing, learn to get better at, and then build a trip around the community. So right. I'm actually creating a community for our, it took me a while. We've had a community, but this is going to be a really powerful one. So I'm excited about that.
So good this for is, you. This is That's like cool. a live cast, something that you would do on a particular day or time.
A little bit of everything. Yeah. It'll be something where any time of the day, people can go and just chat. So it'll be a forum based thing, but also right. there'll be these live events. So every week we'll have a Q&A where I come in and answer questions for people. We'll bring in a guru each week or so to talk about a specific topic. The cool thing about these is you launch them small and you have this really small community. Then you ask the community, what do you want to hear? And then I'll bring in guests that they want to hear.
Right.
They'll be able to interact with these guests, and then they'll be able to put together trips. And then as it grows, as you scale it, right, there's more challenge to keep it personal, but there's things we're going to be doing.
Cool.
What a great idea.
You mentioned earlier, and I can't remember if you said you did or you're going to do, Mako Shark on the Fly. Did you guys have you done that? Did you?
It's out right now. Conway Bowman.
Give us a little tidbit of that. How was
this
that?
This is such a good episode because Conway's, I've interviewed some big people. I mentioned Yvonne. I also interviewed the Fonz, right? The Fonz from Happy Days.
Yeah.
He's a big fly angler. But this one was so good because Conway's kind of like the superstar. He literally only guides Mako shark. And if you don't know Makos, Mako is the baddest ass shark on the planet.
Yeah.
It eats all the big predators. And people think, how do you catch it on a fly rod, right? And then once you get it, how do you land it? Because these things are 200 pounds, sometimes 800 pounds. And he just described what it's like, because these things literally on a fly rod will come out, jump 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
But the other cool thing about Makos is they will come up to your boat and they will literally hit your boat. The big ones.
Aren't they known for actually jumping in the boat when you've got them online?
He told the story about one that did that, but yeah, they're very careful on this, so they don't take them out of the water. It's this whole thing. And a lot of times they actually have a quick long line release where they don't even get them to the boat.
Right.
That thing is unbelievable. But it just shows you where fly fishing is at now, is that literally any species, vampire fish in Africa or whatever, South America, you name the species, there's somebody chasing it with a fly rod.
Did you have to imitate a bait fish for those Makos, or did you have to have some ridiculous fly?
I mean, they're using some of these things. Like even for muskie, we're going to be using 20-inch flies for muskie.
Right, yeah.
I mean, and that's the fun thing about fly fishing is that not only that, you talked about the art, but fly tying, actually tying the flies is this amazing thing. About half the people have fun just tying flies. So you come up with these crazy. The cool thing is that a lot of people, when they tie these flies, the best flies imitate sometimes like baits. Actual, you know, crankbaits or things that you'd use in conventional.
Right.
So we talk a lot about that. Like a lot of these anglers, some of the best, most known Kelly Gallup and fly fishing are people who were conventional fishing and they took that conventional and made it into fly, right?
Mm. Yeah, you don't have to necessarily, it's something worth noting at this point. You don't have to necessarily cast your bait in order to be fly fishing. I know we did an episode trolling with fly fishing gear for speckled trout. For brook trout.
Brook trout, yeah.
In your case.
That was cool. That was, and you guys got some big fish. Some
nice fish.
Johnny.
you're not going to cast a 12-inch fly.
The rods you will, but not this far. So you're not casting them. Like we just had the casting championship. Caddies are casting 200 feet. You're not casting 200 feet, but you can cast a big with the right rod. If it's a 10, 11 weight rod, you can cast it 40 feet.
Did you say 200 feet? Somebody's casting 200 feet.
Yeah, go check this out. The Golden Gate Casting Club. We just had them on the podcast as well. So this is in San Francisco. They have a thing where they measure distance. So the guy, I think the winner had, I think it was like 100, whatever it was, close to 200 feet.
Wow. That's
a
long cast.
How about you? How far can you cast?
Oh, man. I'm not even close. I could cast 70, 80 feet, right? I mean, with the normal rod.
People don't realize. So when we go back to conventional fishing, Angie and I now, we're doing a lot of live scope fishing, and we're seeing that target we'll set our thing for 90 feet. You'll see a target at 70, and you cast out, and you think you're getting to 70, and then it drops at 50. You say, oh, my God, wait a second. Yeah. Now I want to go past that fish. I got to go to 90.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, like 110, 120-foot cast is a long cast, especially with small stuff.
It's surprising that the perception by most angling folks about the amount of line that they actually are able to cast.
Yeah.
And I say that once again, back to my retail days, I used to tell people when they're looking at changing, they'd come in with big spools full of line and they wanted to re-spool the reels. And I would always ask them, how old is this stuff on here? Oh, I don't know, a couple of months. And I said, a couple of months? Well, why do you want to change it? Oh, he says, because I've used it up. I've stretched the hell out of it or whatever. And I say to him, you know, I'd say, do you realize that I would be willing to bet that there is not a bit of line on this reel that has seen daylight beyond 50 feet? Because that's all you're casting, 50 to 75 feet. If you do that every time you cast, you're a champion. But the perception is that that line is, you know, every time they cast, it's 1,000 yards of line going out. You know, it's funny. Dave, I wanted to ask you something because you've had some wonderful guests. Is it difficult finding guests for such a niche? And you'll forgive me if I call it niche, but at one digit percentage of the overall angling community, it's a niche. Is it tough finding guests?
Not at all. Not at all. And I have a system set up for it now. But I mean, when I used to do it on my own, it was, not at all, because there's so many people. And one tip for anybody that has a podcast, and I always love helping people. One tip that we used to do at the start is that when we'd have a great guest on at the end, I would ask the guest, hey, this has been so amazing to chat with you. Would you have maybe one or two or three people, you know, that would love to have a similar conversation like we had? Boom. Now he gives me a couple of people who are probably amazing as well. And then he helps me put it together. So that's how we started out. But now I basically get all of our guests come from our listeners. So I reach out to everybody. I say, hey, if you have a guest you want on, I will put together a podcast episode. And I'll leave that open right now for your listeners. If anybody wants a topic, if they want to learn about fly fishing, I'll put that together. And because we do so much content through the lives and through our podcast, it's easy for me to do this stuff.
Cool.
Quickly, before we let you go, we appreciate you taking this much time with us, by the way.
Yeah.
Electronics, does it play a role in... fly fishing.
I had a bit of a question on this. So I think I told you guys, Ange and Pete, in a podcast that I was out in BC last fall, and we were crominid fishing with live scope, but we were watching the hatches on live scope and casting to them.
Wow. Not
but bad. I know he's the guy who I was with out there. He's pretty immersed in the fly fishing community out there, and he takes quite a bit of heat for it.
Yeah. Who is that, Dean?
I won't say his name, but he's a good buddy of mine. He's a guide out there, so I don't
know. Okay. I'll ask him first. Like I said, our BC, I just had the live was on BC last night, but like because of Phil Roy, the Stillwater Littoral Zone thing, you know, Brian Chan, all these guys, I'm kind of in that BC range a little bit, but
I'll tell you off air. You might know him.
Yeah. Tell me off air. Yeah. But, you know, bottom line is tech is huge. I mean, and Phil calls it, he doesn't call it a fish finder, which is what I used to call it. He calls it like a depth. It's more to figure out where, you know, what's going on below. But these things, these forward-facing, is that what you guys are talking about? Forward-facing sonar? Yeah. So that is, that's a whole nother level of thing. And I do agree. I think that, I don't know if I agree, but I just think we got to realize that, when this becomes a computer game, you know what I mean? You get to some point where, it's not quite like fishing with dad, grandpa back in the old days. And maybe the tech is getting so good, but you could look at fly rods too. I mean, like I said, our lines are so good. Do we have an unfair advantage that we're killing, you know, we're hurting too many fish? I mean, that's a question we all have to think about. I don't know if there's truth to that, but I think it's something we need to really think about.
How many, what kind of percentage would, I'm assuming most fly fishing is done from shore or not in a boat. Am I correct in that or no? Both. No, really,
Again, it's equal whether you're fishing. No, I mean, there is lots of shore fishing, 100%.
Yeah. Okay. There's a good surprise for me.
We were talking earlier a little bit about like the cost of entry or the barrier of entry to fly fishing. I actually think one of the reasons why more people are getting into it is because it actually seems to be higher now for conventional with all the tech.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It used to be the fly rods are expensive compared to spinning and all this stuff. Yeah. But now like it kind of equals out with all the tech that you need to like really compete in fishing. In conventional with fly fishing, it's almost cheaper to enter now.
Yeah. I mean, you probably don't have 12 fly rods all set up on your boat, all sitting across like that, you know, or say eight per person or something like that. I would assume you're probably not to that level as fly anger.
I listened to all that and I still have, and I don't mean to disagree with you, Dave, you know, a hell of a lot more about the subject than I do. But as an outsider looking into your community, I still say that there is an element of people that fly fish that are the purest, hardcore purist anglers who probably would never use electronics, probably would not have 32 rods all set up on the bow of their boat, probably not have all of the high tech fly fishing equipment that's available to fly anglers, because they're in it for a different reason. And, yeah. and I know some of those people.
I would say, and I hear what you're saying, I would definitely disagree a little bit and just say that, I mean, I think you're right, but we just did a survey of our listeners, and we do these two times a year. We send out a survey. We get 30 questions answered. One of them was like, how much conventional fishing do you do, you know, or whatever. And we know that over 60% of our listeners, something like that, conventional fish regularly. So right. I feel like our audience is really a mix. You know what I mean?
That's probably a good representation, that 60% of fly anglers are not the purist.
No.
The ardent, you know, yes. Ascot tie, briar pipe, the tweed yep. hat. I agree with you 100%.
That's a beautiful cast,
I agree. 60%, maybe 70% are not yeah. that. But there is an element in fly fishing, the there purist. Is.
Oh, for
when
sure.
When we talk about electronics or yeah. new technology.
Right, they put up a cross that they were vampires.
Oh, right. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that's negative. I'm just saying it's real. It's the reality. Yeah, I totally
agree.
Right?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I will say on just to wrap this point up is that one of the things I've heard from a quote from when we get these surveys from these listeners is they say they love our show because I'm professional, but not pretentious. Nice. And I love right that on. Because my nice. Show is all, it's not about me. My show is about connecting our listeners to amazing guests.
Yeah.
Right. And so I feel like, and there probably are shows out there that are pretentious and they, you know, in anything. But so I feel like the cool thing about what we do is we really are against that. Our thing is all about bringing in everybody, diversity, inclusion. Let's just bring everybody into fly fishing and let's have fun.
It's perfect. Just another yeah. tool, right? Just
works well, exactly.
And what's nice is that you can learn things every time out, whether you're fly fishing or angling. Doesn't really God. Matter. You learn.
Which, endless.
Which brings me to the closing message. I've learned a few things here today, too. So
nice.
Before I let you go, Dave, is there any like other guests that you think we should book? Two or three other guests that you can give us some good.
Yeah, right. That you guys should have on. This is amazing. And here's what some of my guests say sometimes. Let me get back to you. But no, I mean, for sure. Here's the thing I don't know exactly, but I'll bet you 10 or 15% of our guests have been conventional. So we've had these, Gordon Pizer is one.
Yeah, of course.
He's an amazing girl, right? So we had Gordon on. Gordon was amazing. So I've had some of these guys that overlap and they're just fish guys.
Yeah.
So I've got some names I can give you for sure. But like I said, if you could get the Fonz on, that would be a fun one. He's a good guy.
The Fonz, that would be good. Hey, that'd be cool.
Love to have him on for sure. Well, listen, I am thrilled to death that we opened this door, and I'm hoping that it develops like most good anglers develops into a friendship.
Yeah,
and we have an opportunity at some point to maybe share a boat or a shoreline.
Think of me as your resident fly fishing. If you ever have a question, just ping me. And I'll give you the straight up answer, not perfect. Some yuppie, you know, I'll give you the straight answer on fly fishing.
Done. Perfect.
Tell it. Folks quickly how they can hook up with you and get more of you.
Yeah. So Wet Fly Swing everywhere. Like I said, wetflyswing.com/OJD. I'm just going to put it Outdoor Journal Radio. That'll get them to this page, which will give them a quick little, actually five. I have five tips from our 600 episodes. I've put the five biggest tips from those 600 episodes we've heard most often on that page, plus a couple of videos that will help somebody if they're brand new to get into fly fishing.
Beautiful.
Dave, excellent. Thank you very much, my friend. All the best to you, and may your fly stay dry.
Oh,
appreciate you guys. Keep up the good work. Love the show, you guys.
All right, buddy, thanks. Matt,
take care. Fascinating.
May your fly stay dry.
Yeah, that was
that's good.
Old,
that's kind of a, what do you call that? An oxymoron in the sense that you're casting it into water.
I think but you may your
stay dry. I like that.
Fly always stay dry.
I like that.
Because part of what you're seeing, when you're seeing if they're fishing a dry fly,
they're drying it out in the air.
They're drying
they?
It out.
Yeah, they want it to float.
It eventually, no matter how much dope you put on, because they use a dope to keep it floating, no matter how much you put on, after a while, it gets soaked with water and therefore starts dropping down below the surface. And you don't want that
fly
to be below.
It's like a top water. It's got a leak in it. And the screw holes.
Exactly.
And it's all of a sudden filling up with water.
Well,
and the thing ain't working right.
Fly anglers, they do that back and forth.
There you go. See, dry it out. Good exercise, too.
It's a good exercise, too.
Much better exercise than
That are it. Wonderful program.
Dave's a good guy.
Dave's a great guy. I urge everybody that's watching that is borderline or fence sitting on trying fly fishing, check him out.
Check out his videos, etc. He says it's not that expensive to get into. Probably cheaper than what you and I do now,
well,
like you
like
said.
Anything else. You can make it super expensive, or or you can make it just... I'm sure there's all kind. Well, there was. I'm sure there still is entry-level fly fishing gear all over
Gotta
the place,
be,
right?
Right.
And I used to sell packages for $100.
Really?
Yeah.
That was 25 years ago, 20 years ago.
Rod,
yeah.
So reel, now maybe line.
A couple $100 now wouldn't hurt a guy. I mean, people spend that all the time now anyways. I don't know, conventional, right?
The line is probably the most surprisingly expensive part.
That doesn't surprise me a bit. You know what I mean? A spool of fluorocarbons, $30 for us. So I can't imagine what good dry or...
$100 line is, really, is not out of the question.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyways, that are it. Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate you coming into our world once again and our guest world.
Into Dave's world, because that's not really our world. No. So that was kind of us stepping out of our world, right?
Yep. Remember, fishingcanada.com, the gateway, the portal to your next fishing adventure. And until then, for the rest of the crew here, Vova over there, Dean Taylor. Dean learned a lot today about how to get guests.
You figure? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. Dave's influence, he's going to put it into Dean's head, and hopefully he's going to be, you know. He made his 3 mistakes already today, Dean, so he's going to be going home after that, right? But that's off-the-air stuff. We had a little fun with Dean this morning, so.
He's Peter Bowman. I'm Andrew Boyle. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll catch you next time.